Boston City Councilor Andrea Campbell joins us now for her first public conversation since the preliminary election 2 weeks ago. Councilor, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thank you, and thank you for having me.
I'm glad to have you. I'd love to be a little human as we start, Councilor Campbell, and just ask you, how you doing?
I'm doing well. If anything, looking forward to getting a little rest. I haven't had any since. I've been making a lot of thank you calls and had to attend a couple of funerals, actually, for some supporters, but doing well and looking forward to what's next.
I'm sorry for those losses. I do want to say that. And are you at a moment where you're at peace with how things have unfolded? Have you had enough time to sort of settle in your mind?
Yes. I mean, I'm always at peace. Most folks who know me really well know that I'm a very faith-driven person. And so my heart is filled with peace because of that. And as I told my team and my staff that continue to work really hard, including in these final days to wrap up, that everything we had control over, we did exceptionally well. And we centered people in this campaign. We led with integrity, compassion, honesty, and substance. And there's no regrets. And now it just tells us that the work continues, but in different ways.
So there's so much we could talk about, but I feel like you kind of picked our first subject for us with your op-ed in the Boston Globe on endorsements. You said in it that you weren't going to endorse either of the candidates, you know, Boston City Councilors Michelle Wu, Anissa Saibi George, until each had laid out specific steps for how she would close inequity gaps facing Black communities to Boston's Black communities, that centered approach you just talked about. Why put that stake in the ground, and what are you trying to either accomplish or head off by laying that stake out?
It was really important to me to remind folks that this campaign and my candidacy was about honesty, integrity, substance, but most importantly, centering the people. You know, no backroom deals, no conversations behind the scenes. Everything was forward facing and bottom up. And so that won't change going forward. And it really is, I think, the time to change not only the narrative, but to end the sort of backroom deal strategy that has consistently failed to move the agenda and to move on issues that affect our Black and brown communities, and of course, evidenced by COVID. So I want specifics. You know, what are the candidates going to do to address not only the inequities in housing and education, but mass and caste, which is having a disproportionate effect, particularly on Black men in overdoses? What are they going to do to address public health inequities, economic inequities, the racial wealth gap, tangible specifics, and accountability? All of that is critically important to me because it's also critically important to my supporters. And so I will sit down with both candidates to have those conversations and to push for them to make specifics.
So a couple follow-up questions there. You used the term backroom deal a couple of times, which, of course, what's hanging in my head is the fact that over the weekend, Acting Mayor Janey endorsed City Councilor Michelle Wu for mayor of Boston, saying she thinks Wu is best equipped to address racial and systemic inequities facing the city. Are you concerned that that was not sufficiently transparent, that there was some sort of backroom nature to it?
It wasn't public facing. So the question I'm left with is, what again specifically is Councilor Wu going to do as mayor to address the inequities? And I'll give you one example. I still live in Mattapan, and the children here still have a 5% chance of getting into a high quality Boston public school, compared to some downtown neighborhoods where it's 80%. My people want specifics on how you're going to change that. And why this is necessary is because residents, especially residents of color and Black residents, distrust the political system so much because they have been promised things for generations where those promises have been broken. And so if we want to change this game and to really encourage folks not only to vote, but to be engaged with government and to be a part of that, we really have to change the way we do things. And that's how I'm going to continue to lead.
So tell us what it looks like. So the two candidates sit down, they have a conversation with you. Is that done in public? Do you report it back out in public? What policy items do you need to hear? How does it look when it's done differently and you then say, okay, that was people-centered, and now I'm going to endorse?
That's right. So I will meet with both candidates. They, of course, have both asked, and I think it's extremely important. But my ask will be to them, just that. What in their plans or what are they developing that will specifically meet the needs of residents of color, especially Black residents? What are the tangible, measurable things? How will they deliver racial equity in health, housing, schools, public safety? And I'll give you one example, policing reform. I had a very specific plan on how to make our department more transparent and accountable, root out racial disparities, invest in the root causes of violence. That all came from community. What are their plans on that? Mass and cast, the same thing. And it will be public afterwards. So I will, you know, obviously have that conversation, give them the opportunity to share on their specifics, and then make a decision on whether or not I endorse in this race based on that plan. Because what I heard loud and clear from my constituents is they want it to be public. They want commitments to be made public, and they want them to be tangible and specific so that they can wrap their head around it. And also they can see it's achievable, but they can most importantly hold the person accountable once they become mayor of the city of Boston.
All right, let's pick up on the two policy issues you just brought up, and we'll use this sort of as a follow-on. Any deal breakers for you? So, for example, among your proposals on police reform was cutting a minimum of $50 million from the police operating budget and universal body cam use. Are those deal breakers for you? Do you need to see a candidate who wants to go where you wanted to go on that issue?
I'm not being that strict, but I do want to see alignment. So I do want to see someone who is talking about ways in which to make our department more transparent and accountable, to fully implement OPAT, to establish a public safety dashboard, to expand body cameras across the department.
And just to clarify, sorry, OPAT is the Office of Police Accountability and Transparency.
That's right. And to, of course, look at the budget, which is not sustainable, and to come up with a strategy on ways on how to make that budget sustainable while reinvesting in the root causes of violence, because police alone will never be able to solve violence in the city of Boston. But I also want specifics on education. Are you going to establish a VOTEC system, for example, where Madison Park is the center of that system? Are you going to make changes to our assignment process to allow particularly children of color who don't have access to high quality schools finally have access? Are you going to do, what are your plans to improve the failing schools within Boston Public Schools? What are your plans to close the racial wealth gap? What are your plans to support businesses run by people of color? Transportation deserts. I really want to see those specifics, not value statements or big ideas. And I think that is critically important because that's what I heard from my supporters. So, they loved our work because it was specific and the plans were tangible.
So Madison Park is one example that makes me think of this. You know, you and John Barrios, neither of you have endorsed yet. Any possibility that the two of you form a center of gravity on some of the policy issues that the two of you shared in common or believed strongly in to try to move these candidates where you want to see the policy outcomes be? And any chance you just don't endorse because you're not satisfied?
I can't speak to Barrows and what he plans to do. I only made it clear what I plan to do and that I want to continue to lead in such a way that the people are centered in this and that it is not only about centering them, but it's also doing work and putting out ideas that will actually have an impact on the issues they care about. And for that impact to happen, it needs to be data-driven. There needs to be metrics. It needs to be tangible. And they need to be specific. And that's what I want to see more of as it pertains to communities of color and Black residents in the city of Boston. And they both have work to do there. I'm looking forward to those conversations to hear from them directly what that looks like. And then if I decide to endorse, I will stand with them because they've made those commitments to the people of the city of Boston, especially to Black and Brown residents in the city.
So I do want to talk to you about what comes next for you. But before we do that, we've just talked for a long time about the things you want to do to make sure that communities of color are centered in the remainder of this race and in the next mayor's policy priorities. I'm sure you're aware, I know you're aware, that probably the biggest postmortem since the preliminary election has been the question of whether Black voters in particular were split, whether it was a good thing or an unhealthy thing to have three Black candidates who together took 42% of the vote, a plurality of the vote. We've run every scenario and talked to all kinds of commentators here on Radio Boston. What is your position now?
My position from the very beginning of the race was that there was more than enough room for more than one Black candidate to run. And I still believe that to be true. What I see the work needs to be going forward is voter engagement, is really going into communities, particularly communities of color, where that deep distrust exists, and to really explaining why these systems, the political systems, matter and why it touches their daily life. So there's work to do around voter engagement. I think in this race, there were also missed opportunities. We had too many folks stand on the sidelines, including elected officials who didn't necessarily have to endorse, but didn't get out to actually encourage folks to vote in this historic election. That's a problem. And I also will say the media. We needed more substantive coverage of this race, and it came very late, more than one TV debate. There were so many folks who saw one debate and said, is there more to come? I need to learn more. I want to know more. And so we give more coverage to the federal and state races, gubernatorial races. The local races need just as much coverage because of how significant they are. So we have a lot more work to do, and I'm excited for what lies ahead, particularly in mobilizing and engaging residents and communities of color on the issues that they care about that also need to be addressed in the city of Boston.
All right. You mentioned earlier another issue for the city, which is mass and cast. You may be aware that before you joined us today, we talked with Suffolk County Sheriff Steve Tompkins, who has a proposal to use essentially excess capacity at South Bay Correctional Facility involuntarily house and treat people who are experiencing substance use disorder and homelessness. He and I went back and forth a lot about whether or not this is Section 35. I guess my primary question to you is, are you aware of his plan? What is your reaction to his plan? And have we gotten to the point where we've run out of other creative approaches?
I have read it, and I will say this is what's been really deeply disturbing to me, because during the campaign, of course, I've been lifting up this issue as the issue and the other public health crisis that was not getting the action it needed from the city and the state, and developed a plan in partnership with a whole host of stakeholders on the ground back in January of this year. And so I do think there are options on the table that the city of Boston can take to get people housed in supportive housing, to deal with the homelessness crisis, to get folks the services they need, and to push the state to do more. What has been the problem is the inaction and the lack of urgency. I've heard that every step of the way. So before we go to a sort of a criminalization piece, Section 35, I think there are options on the table that need to be exhausted, and that requires action by the city, and by the acting mayor.
Getting in the way, Counselor? You've talked about the inaction. What is getting in the way?
The inaction is twofold, I think. One is it's just that inaction, whether it was the previous mayor or the acting mayor. And I spoke very candidly about that and the defensive posture that the current administration is taking on these issues. I was in many forums where they were suggesting things are getting better. And I was just shocked because that wasn't the case. And I do think it has to be led by the mayor's office. That is critically important. And until that happens, you're going to have different stakeholders trying to develop their own plans, and it's not going to be coordinated. So the mayor's office has to drive it. And the state equally also has to step up, working in partnership with the city. But both have to get off, you know, their bums and do the work. And I'm going to keep pushing on this issue because I care deeply about the city of Boston, and that shouldn't exist here.
All right. Let's look ahead a little bit. One of the things that's been on my mind a bunch is, regardless of who wins in November, the Boston City Council will have some huge changes. I'm thinking back to some of the pictures of that class of women of color who all came in together in the Boston City Council. I'm sure you remember some of those pictures. You were in them, right? All of a sudden, one way or another, you will not be on the council anymore. Michelle Wu will not be on the council anymore. Kim Janey, Anissa Saibi George, Lydia Edwards is now running for a state Senate office. That is a powerful group of women leaders, women of color with experience, who are all going to be gone from that body. I mean, no disrespect to other strong leaders on the council or those who are running for election, but that's a big change. What's the future of the council, and how do you think about that?
It is a big change, but it's also exciting at the same time, because we're going to elect some new blood, and I think there's nothing wrong with that. I don't think any of these positions should be designed in such a way that you are sitting in these seats forever. And so I'm excited to work with whoever the new counselors are to make sure that they have whatever they need to be successful, including someone, you know, who will replace me. And I'm excited about the possibilities going forward. I know I'm not going anywhere. The work very much continues in this city. I still care deeply about the issues. It never was about me. Maybe my leadership, but not me per se. It's about the people, and they want to see changes and progress in policing reform, on mass and cast, in our Boston public schools, in the economy. So many issues to work on. So I'm excited about the possibilities and working with all of the stakeholders in this great ecosystem that we have in the city of Boston to finally get some things done on the issues that matter the most to residents and especially people of color.
And what do you have to get done before you leave the council in your mind?
I have to make sure that OPAD is up and running, the Office of Police Accountability and Transparency, really important. And then some, of course, issues around Boston Public Schools and parents and students returning, mass and cast. So there's still a lot on the table that I'm excited to work on. And then, of course, to transition to the next District 4 leader who will pick up the mantle, and I will support that individual as well and excited about doing that.
And advice for that individual and for the next mayor?
Be bold and courageous, and don't be afraid to work with folks around you, right? There's a lot of work to do, and I'm going to support that person. And I think that's critically important. As we sort of talk about succession planning, it's important that we all work together to get things done. And I'm excited about doing just that.
All right. So I want to know, do you know what's next for you? And are you going to tell us?
I'm going to take time with my beautiful husband and my two beautiful boys. And then I'm going to think about it and not rush into the next thing. And I'm excited for the possibilities to continue to serve the city, of course, and to continue to do the work in some way and in some capacity.
Anything you want to leave with our listeners today?
I have been thinking a lot about my supporters and those who stepped up, many of whom never worked on campaigns before, including the fellows and young students we had a part of this campaign. And I'm grateful to them. I'm telling them to not give up any sense of hope. The work continues, and we must continue it as a collective to ensure that this city is indeed equitable for everyone. And I'm excited about the possibilities that lie ahead for the city of Boston.
All right. That is former mayoral candidate and Boston City Councilor Andrea Campbell. Councilor, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.